Good morning. Nice to see you all this morning. It's been an interesting morning, a lot of weather changes already. Before I get into talking about my subject today, which is this koan, The World Honored One Points to the Ground, I'd just like to remind everyone that we're having a special event today at 12:30. And as many of you know, we've been talking for a long time about making some improvements to our building. And that's going to help us to practice the Dharma and share the Dharma with other folks. And we've been working on this for a long time. And we are finally there. And today we're going to have our kickoff for our capital campaign to raise money to do this. That happens at 12:30. It'll happen here, and we'll provide a lot of information about the project. Our architect, Rick Okada, is here, and he will be showing us the plans, and I'll be speaking a little bit, and we'll have lunch, and it should be fun. So hope you can stick around for that. And so because of this event, and because I've been involved a lot in the capital campaign over the past several months, along with many other people, temple building has been a lot on my mind. Literally, building the temple has been a lot on my mind. And I found this koan, which is about this very subject. It's a pretty well-known koan. Many of you have probably seen this before. And you may see some parallels between what I talk about with the koan and our subject matter about our own temple. So this is case 4 from the Book of Serenity, and it's on your program. And the world honored one here is the Buddha, and the other character appearing in this little story is Indra, king of the gods. So Indra is from the Hindu tradition, but he often shows up in Buddha stories as well. And here is the case. When the world honored one was walking with his assembly, he pointed to the ground with his hand and said, "This place is good for building a temple." Indra took a stalk of grass and stuck it in the ground and said, "The temple has been built." The world honored one smiled. And that's the whole story. Pretty simple story. The Buddha is out walking with many beings surrounding him. Says this is a good place to build a temple. Indra places a stalk of grass in the ground and says, "The temple is already built." And the Buddha smiles. So what's going on here? I think to answer that, we really need to talk about two ways of seeing, which are familiar to many of you, I think, probably most of you. But it's good to keep talking about these two ways of seeing. There are many different ways to talk about it. And, of course, there are many ways to interpret a koan like this. And the open-endedness of koans is part of what's wonderful about them. So I'm not saying that this is the only way this can be interpreted, but it's my interpretation today. And one way to look at this is that we have two different ways of looking at what a temple is. When the Buddha says, this place is good for building a temple, it seems like he's talking about a real, actual temple, a place that is built, that people can come to, that people can practice in. So a temple is a thing that we can name. It is an entity that is distinct from other entities. But when Indra places a blade of grass in the ground and says that the temple is built, he's talking about a very different kind of temple. He's challenging our ideas about what a temple is. And I think he's saying that the blade of grass and the real actual temple are just the same. So temple has a much wider meaning than just the physical structure. That physical structure, from this way of seeing, is not really a thing that we can name as something separate from everything else in the universe. So there's this world of real, actual things, or at least we think, or at least we'd like to think, that they're real, actual things. And that world is easy to see. We've known about that world all of our lives. Things are things. They are real. Food is real. The tiger is real. I think a lot of this way of seeing comes from our biological predisposition towards survival. We need to see that the tiger is there. We need to gather food. We need to plan for things. And of course we do. Above all, when we look at the world from this perspective, we think that we are real. I, Ted, am real, a real person, an entity distinct from everything else. And I must survive. And a temple is a temple. So don't tell me that I don't exist. Don't tell me that the temple doesn't exist. And this is sometimes called the small mind view of the world. Then there's that other way of seeing, which is often called big mind, which the Buddha taught. And I think ironically in this story, it's Indra, not the Buddha, who asserts the big mind way of seeing. And Indra really is the one who's saying things are not things. A temple is a blade of grass. A blade of grass is a temple. The temple is already built. There is no future. It's what is here right now that matters. The right nowness of it is what matters. Because when we separate things out into past and future, into this thing and that thing, we miss a lot. We deny something about the universe that is fundamentally true, something about interconnectedness, about how you can't isolate stuff when you're making your plans, because if you do, you're going to get into trouble. You're not going to see the whole picture. So interconnectedness, right here-ness, right now-ness. A temple both is and isn't a blade of grass. Or maybe that's not true either. Things aren't really reducible to words. So koans like this are little stories that are impossible to solve with a thinking mind. And I think they take us to the intersection of these two ways of seeing. And they take us to that door, that sort of magic door. And they help us to walk through that door. That's a door that our conventional thinking minds cannot take us through. And somehow, these two seemingly contradictory ways of seeing are both true. And somehow, we humans have the capacity to entertain both of these things in our mind at the same time. So, this koan seems really different to me from a lot of other koans, because usually the student demonstrates a lack of understanding. That's how they start out. The student doesn't get interconnectedness. The student sees things as being separate. He or she is stuck in that mode, and the teacher shakes the student out of that and shows the student interconnectedness. And here's a little example of that. This is a two-line koan. Ta Mei asked Matsu, "What is Buddha?" Matsu said, "This very mind is Buddha." What is Buddha? This very mind is Buddha. So when Ta Mei asks, "What is Buddha?" Ta Mei is thinking of Buddha as something separate from himself and something separate from this moment. There's some Buddha out there, apart from me, that I don't understand, that I need to understand. I want you to tell me what that is. And Matsu, in saying this very mind is Buddha, is saying that Buddha cannot be anything but what is right here. The Buddha is your very question. The Buddha is your very confusion. You can't look elsewhere. It's this very moment. So, just like Indra, no temple apart from this moment. But here in this koan, we don't start with the student. We start with the Buddha, who says, "Let's erect a temple." He's talking about something in this real, actual world, or what seems to be this real, actual world, or what we would like to be the real, actual world. He's talking about that temple. And then we have Indra coming in, Indra, the king of the gods, kind of in the teacher role, saying, "Wait a minute, the temple is already built. The temple is not something separate from us. But then the Buddha smiles. So I think the Buddha knew this all along, of course. I read an article on this koan by James Myoun Ford, and I found that very helpful. And in the version he uses, and I don't know where he got this, he says that the world-honored one was walking not with his assembly, but with gods and devas and humans, which sounds a lot different. There are gods in the Buddhist pantheon. There are devas, which are a type of celestial beings, and there are humans. And Myoun says, here we're given a bit of a fairy tale. And he says, instead of the figure of history, meaning the Buddha of history, walking a hot and dusty road, probably sweating, and with companions that may have not had a bath in a while, we have the world-honored one shimmering and light, accompanied by angels and by gods. Here, one of the more important of those deities, Indra, is his close companion. So here we're not starting in the world of separation, where the student doesn't get it. We're starting out in a refined sort of place. And you can almost kind of hear the heavenly choirs as the Buddha is walking down the road with all of these gods. So we're not going from the mundane to the celestial. When the Buddha says, let's build a temple, we go from the celestial to the mundane. And when Indra places the blade of grass, we go back to the celestial. So it seems to kind of start with this big mind perspective, angels and gods, and then kind of dips down into our actual world of forms, and then goes back up into the celestial world again. And then the Buddha smiles and everything's okay. And this is great. I mean, this is coming from something that's different from the usual perspective, but it does the same thing. It does the same thing. It brings us to that door where these two worlds can come together. There's a commentary on this koan in the Book of Serenity from Yamada that I'm going to read. It starts out, a sutra says, Mount Sumeru contains a poppy seed. A poppy seed contains Mount Sumeru. If we are still thinking of the poppy seed and Mount Sumeru as two separate things, it is not yet the real fact. And then he talks about how a light bulb is not separate from the light it emits. It's the same thing. And then he says, you must realize that each of us exhausts the entire universe, that each of us is alone and honored in the entire universe with no one above or below us. It's all right here, right now, no matter what we might think about ourselves. Maybe we're not feeling so confident today, but it's us here, right now. This is the universe. We are the center of the universe. Not in a selfish way, but in kind of this unselfish, interconnected way. Wherever we are, it is always dead center. So Indra is right in saying the temple is erected. At any time, it is the center of the universe. It is the essential world. But what's the real temple when we get down to brass tacks? It has to be a case of this very mind is the Zen hall. We think of this as the Zen hall, but the Zen hall is wherever we are, in our confusion, in our lack of understanding, in our joy, in our sorrow, whatever it is, that's the Zen hall right there. This is not the individual mind, but the mind of the entire universe. That's why it's not a selfish thing to say, wherever we are, it is always dead center. The temple erected in our true mind will never crumble. The one is the many, and the many is the one, and wherever we are, it is heaven itself. So at any time, we are the center of the universe, and the temple has to be right here. And any time you think it's somewhere else, Zen brings you back. Zen challenges you. It brings you back. And that's what Indra is demonstrating. If we're going to be at home in the universe so as not to feel the suffering of being displaced, we must act with right here-ness, right now-ness, right now, with no separation between the various mundane things of the world, this is not separate from this. And no separation between this world of forms and this world of interconnectedness in which forms are illusory. Here, firmly in both places, that's our place as human beings, and that's our true nature. So, does that mean that we really don't need to have a temple? That's my big question. Maybe we shouldn't be building a temple, because maybe that's seeing things as separate. Maybe that's going to be a waste of time. Well, I don't agree with that point of view. And I'm interested in chapter 2 of this koan, the part that was never written. What is the sequel? What happened next? And I'm going to offer two possibilities for a sequel. Here's the first possibility for a sequel. And the assembly continued walking. That's the whole sequel. So what that means is maybe they all kind of laughed to themselves and they thought, what a silly idea that we would need to build a temple. The temple's already built and everything's interconnected and a blade of grass is a temple. The Buddha, I think, was testing us or maybe just kidding us. We don't really need a temple. But if you've heard some of my talks, you may have guessed that that's not my favorite interpretation. So let me offer this sequel, which is a little longer. And as he continued to smile, the Buddha addressed the gods, devas, and humans and asked, "Who else will help me with this temple? Who knows how to draw up plans? Who knows a good source of building materials? Who is a good carpenter? Who knows how to prepare food for the workers? What's our timetable? And how will we pay for all of this?" And the assembly, starting with Indra, responded eagerly with many suggestions, and soon the temple was built. So, koans don't usually read this way. They kind of leave us in that celestial realm, right? And the student was enlightened. Well, there's that one koan that ends in "go wash your bowl," which is really good because that kind of brings us back to this world of forms. But ordinarily, koans are not about how, and then here's how you go forth and do good in the world. And maybe when folks compile koans or write koans or choose them, they think, well, if we talk too much about sort of this world of forms, people might get distracted. They might think that, then we'll get sort of too absorbed. We'll forget that the blade of the grass and the temple are the same. But I think koans should take us from the celestial to the mundane sometimes. Once the koan takes us to this vast realm of interconnectedness, we still need to know how to act here. It's like the 10 ox herding pictures, which I've referred to before, where 6 or maybe 8 pictures in, both the ox and the self have been transcended. But does the series of pictures end there? No. The last picture is the ox herder returning to society. And the ox herder says, "Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust-laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now before me, the dead trees become alive." So, nowness in the midst of society. That's where the practice takes place. Sometimes we want that first story, and the assembly kept walking. We want that to be the end, because it seems kind of pure and unsullied, and it's nice to think we can dwell forever in this place where the blade of grass is the temple. It's messy to think about organizing workers to build the temple and the timetable and everything. And we're afraid we'll stray again from the center of the world, of the universe, if we come back to this practical place. But I think that this nowness, this center of the worldness, which is the same as interconnectedness, does not preclude us from planning. It doesn't preclude us from engaging in planning. No, nor should it. We live in a universe where we have to plan. And we may think of the Buddha as being kind of pure. He's barefoot. He has almost no possessions. He begs for food and he teaches. And he always keeps it simple. But there had to be planning. He had a lot of followers. I think it varied from time to time. When he delivered the Diamond Sutra, it says right at the beginning that at that time he had 1,250 followers. That's a lot of people, and somebody had to organize all that. They go out and beg for food, right? They can't all go to the same house. Someone had to organize the training of the monks. They had to deal with disputes that came up. They had to dig the latrines, right? This is important. So you have to plan. And that goes back to the two perspectives. Things are not things, and yet they are. So the proper perspective on this koan, I think, is right nowness in the midst of everything you do. And that includes the actual building of the temple, and it includes all of the messy details. That's the real opportunity for growth. That's the real test of whether we can maintain right nowness. And we come here in the Zendo where things are very quiet and we can face the wall if it's early in the morning and conditions are about as perfect as they can be for just sitting and being in touch with that interconnectedness. But that doesn't mean that this place is sort of so special it excludes everything else. This is kind of a distillation here. This is kind of a place where we remove distractions and we can practice more easily. But it's all about going out and practicing out there too, amid the challenges. So I think Indra is saying that yes, we do need a temple, but in building the temple, we need to remember every step of the way that the grass is the temple, that they are the same. We have right nowness in the midst of executing the plan. If we're planning the digging of the latrines, right nowness there, right nowness in the actual digging. Nothing is separate. So you never say in your project of digging the latrines that, well, this part isn't really part of my practice. This is outside of it. You never say that. You take such care to be aware of the shovel in your hand and what you're doing, and you take such care to be aware of your own confusion and your own feeling that, well, this is outside the Dharma. Well, what's that? Your feeling that you're outside the Dharma, that's the Dharma. And this means you take care with your process of organizing the work if you're in charge. The meeting about how we're going to organize this is just the same as Indra picking up the blade of grass. That moment matters that much. So we're bringing these two perspectives together, right nowness in the midst of things, and that makes the Buddha smile. Here's another commentary on this koan called Sturmer's Verse. Weeds grow through cracks in the concrete. A church was built over a temple, which in turn was built over an ancient burial ground. And still weeds grow through cracks in the concrete. I'll just repeat that. Weeds grow through cracks in the concrete. A church was built over a temple, which in turn was built over an ancient burial ground. And still weeds grow through cracks in the concrete. Things arise, things fall, things come together, things fall apart. The weedliness of it and the templeness of it are the same. The temple is imbued with here-ness and now-ness. We care for both the temple and the weed. So, this story, we can relate this story to our own physical temple here and what we plan to do with it. And there'll be an opportunity to hear more about that later today and on other occasions too. But the important thing is that no part of the process is separate from any other part. No part of the process is separate from right nowness. The meeting to decide the next step of the building process is as important as the Dharma talk. It's as important as cleaning the toilets. It's as important as receiving instruction. All of these things matter, and all of these things can be conducted from that big mind perspective. And if we can do that, if we can bring the spirit of Indra with his blade of grass into every step of the process, we will be fine. We will be engaging in the best and most challenging Zen practice, and it'll be a great opportunity for growth. So that means we listen to everyone, we bring our own opinions, we set them forth clearly, we make sure everyone has an opportunity to speak up, and we each come prepared to give up something of our own opinion about how it should be. Because you have to do that when you live in community. And that was demonstrated recently. I went to an event at Clouds in Water Zen Center in St. Paul, and this was a celebration for Hokyoji. Many of you know Hokyoji. It's a monastery in southeastern Minnesota. They had a capital campaign, and it's completed now, and their buildings are going up. They're putting up two new buildings down there, and I can't wait to see them. And I was really struck by two things that were said at that celebration. One person said that during this process, everyone, absolutely everyone, had to give up something of their own ideas about how the project should be. And Dokai, who is the guiding teacher down there, talked about what a long and difficult process it was. And he said, "And we did it without losing anybody. That's the most important part," he said in his very low-key way that he has. And I thought that was really wonderful. And I repeated this story to someone recently, and they said, "Really? Well, why would somebody leave? You know, like, that's kind of scary and kind of shocking." But when a community undertakes a really big project like this, there will be different opinions about what we need to do. And some of us are going to come up against some pretty hard places, maybe some inflexible places. And sometimes folks come up against places that are so inflexible that they feel they have no choice but to leave. And I hope that happens with no one. I hope that when we come up against those places that seem inflexible, that we'll be able to find some flexibility there, that we'll be able to help each other through that. And I think we will. If I look at what's happened so far over a few years of planning, it's been very, very good. People are very open to stepping back a little bit from their own personal opinion of how it has to be and asking, well, what's best for the community? What's going to work for everyone? Where can we find that middle path? So I hope we can all have the courage to hang in there and not leave and work this out, that we as a community will grow as a result of this process. And I think we will. I think it's going to be wonderful. It's about change, but change is inevitable. Change happens. It's how we deal with the change that will be our test. And as I said, it's gone well through an astonishing number of meetings and conversations. By the way, it's quite possible to get into this stuff. If you would like to be sort of more involved in these things about changes to the temple, there are ways to do that, and you could simply ask me about that, or someone on the board about that. So there's your temple, and also this is your temple, the temple around you, and I think that through love and patience and persistence, we're going to go forth with this project. We're going to always remember each step of the way that the temple is already built. So that's what I have to say this morning. And if anyone has a comment or a question, I would love to hear from you. Benton.
I got a simpler interpretation of this koan. In my mind, a temple is a sangha, a place, and a structure to anchor to that place. And the decision for the place, and they already had the assembly.
Mm-hmm.
The decision was made, this is a good place.
Mm-hmm.
And Indra said, here's our structure. The rest is just add-ons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Well, let's just sit for a moment and see if anything else comes up. Yes, Jeff.
Ancient burial grounds. This is, in fact, an ancient burial ground. The Dakota people lived here before us.
Mm-hmm.
They were driven from this land.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, I hope this history is informing the decision process about the temple.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, thank you. We can't forget that. That's an essential part of what we're doing here. Thank you.